And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. We're going to have two special guests on today's program. We're going to focus on the defensive line, specifically the pass rushers. We're going to have a spot geared towards Devin Taylor, who the Giants recently signed at free agency, came over from the Lions, so we'll get more info on him. And then one of the Giants' late-round picks, Avery Moss, out of Youngstown State. We will do a spot regarding that as well. So that'll be the big theme. And I think that there's a number of players that are coming back from injury. There are some new faces, Paul. You got an interesting mix when you look at the defensive line this season.
Yeah, you know who the two starters are. I mean, obviously, OV and JPP, if you want to get alphabetical about it. Those are the two guys who are going to be manning the bulk of the snaps. But the question is, if you're the Giants, do you really want them playing 95% of the time as they were last season? I think the obvious answer is no. You'd like to try to cut back on their snaps, if at all possible, get more of a rotation like when Spags had the Strahans and the Tucks and the OCs and the Kiwanukas and the JPPs of the world. You'd like to have that rotation, the Dave Tollefsons, if you will. And to do that, you have to have enough depth with guys who can at least... What's the word I'm looking for? How about this? Who can at least gain the respect of an offensive coordinator that they can get to the quarterback? It's not enough just to plug in a guy and have him play there. No, he's got to be able to at least show the other team that we need to be concerned with this guy. You don't have to draw a double team. All right, Dave Tollefson didn't draw double teams. But Dave Tollefson did enough in his limited snaps to make sure that people knew he was on the field. You know, you can't be invisible. If you're going to be in this rotation and be the third or the fourth guy in this rotation, you cannot be invisible. You must be effective enough that your snaps matter. If the Giants can find those guys out of this group of players, they are going to be so much better off.
Well, speaking of that, Devin Taylor, who the Giants just signed, could be a player that fits into that criteria that you just laid out, Paul, in terms of one of the rotational pass rushers for the Giants. And to find out more about Devin Taylor, what he'll bring to the Giants, we're now joined by Jim Bradstatter, Lions radio analyst, and he joins us right now here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Jim, Lance Medow, Paul Dottino with you. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Hey, good. Everything all right here. How about you?
Doing quite well. Well, let's start with Devin Taylor, and we were just talking about perhaps the Giants taking a look at some of the guys on the depth chart. Jim, from your time covering the Lions, what jumped out to you about Devin Taylor, and what exactly are his strengths?
I think Devin is extremely athletic and very quick. He's not one of those big defensive ends that can stand up, I guess, against the run, but he's very athletic. He's got great quickness. I thought coming out of college, he played the opposite end from Jadeveon Clowney at South Carolina. And I thought he was going to be really good for the Detroit Lions. I always thought he kind of played in the shadow of Clowney and didn't get as much credit as he deserved in college. And he came to Detroit and he had some flashes. And I think the problem was, and it was what you were talking about prior to me coming on, every now and again he kind of disappeared. I mean, he had some days where he was really, really good, and maybe, you know, one of the big catalysts in a great defensive performance by a Lion or by the Lions' defense on a particularly Sunday. And then the next Sunday, he was just kind of out there. And then I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, teams don't let good guys get away. And I think that the Lions had felt that they got enough out of Devin, and they felt that he could give more or should be more of a factor on a consistent basis, and wasn't. So in the sense that you're talking about him as a guy that fits in the depth and rotation, yeah, maybe he's the guy that fits there, where he gets limited snaps, and in those limited snaps, he's able to make the most of it.
Jim, when he fell short, or when he disappeared, if you will, was it more because he was up against better players in those instances? Was it a lack of effort in those cases? Did he battle injury on occasion that maybe a lot of people didn't know about and it seemed to affect his play? Why did you believe he had those sore spots, if you will?
I wish I knew. I mean, everybody in the National Football League, I don't care who you are, you're going to have a little nick, you're going to have a bruise, you're not going to be as good as you were the week before if you've got a little bit of a problem. But if you're playing, you've got to have an impact. If you're out there, you've got to do something and make your presence known. And I think on occasion, yeah, he ran into some tackles that he didn't match up well against that maybe were a little bit bigger and could kind of muscle him a little bit. But overall, you'd like to see him, you know, be more of effective, you know, on a consistent basis, game in, game out. Lots of reasons why they're not, but the really good ones, the guys you want to pay a lot of money to, the guys you pick up on free agency, you want them to be effective every snap they're on the field.
What would be your thoughts on the Giants moving him down inside to play some of that defensive tackle in a pass rush package? How much did the Lions use him in that regard, and is that something that actually could get him some more favorable matchups?
I don't think so. Devin's not a big guy. I mean, I think if you run him down inside, I think the quarterback on offense is going to check to a play, and they're going to double team him off the ball, and they're going to run right at it.
Okay.
Because he doesn't have enough butt, you know? He needs a little bit more in his butt.
Needs baggage there. A little luggage.
You need a little luggage there. You need somebody to stand up to a 320-pound guard who can stand up to that guy and get double-teamed and still maintain a stalemate at the line of scrimmage. That's what you're looking for inside. And what Devin was best at was when he lined up, you know, that 2 yards outside the tackle and got his head down near the ground like he was a sprinter coming out of the blocks. That's where he was effective, because his speed is what is his most valuable asset. His speed, he's long, he's got big arms, you know. All that stuff is his asset. That gets lost inside. So if I'm the Giants, I don't think I'm playing him inside unless you play stunt games, line games, twist games,
right,
where you line him up inside and you bounce him all the way around the outside, use that speed to get him around the perimeter.
Which is something I'm sure defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo may look at, because he has lined up some speedy defensive ends on the inside in his previous stint here with the Giants. Jim, one of the guys that comes to mind when I think of Devin Taylor is Willie Young, who was with the Lions and then wound up leaving. They did not re-sign him. He joined the Chicago Bears. He was also somewhat of a rotational defensive lineman and maybe would come in and out of the situations when they needed him. Am I seeing that right? Do you feel that Devin Taylor is somewhat similar to Willie Young? And how much did they maybe consider not signing Willie Young and what they were considering and not bringing back Devin Taylor?
I think similar. I think they're similar guys. I think that, to be quite frank, I think that Devin came in with a little bit more upside potential than maybe Willie did. Willie was one of those guys that kind of bounced around a bit and came into Detroit and really kind of surprised them. One of the reasons why the Lions, I think, decided that Devin Taylor may have been, you know, the guy that they would let go is they got great production last year out of Kerry Hyder. This kid came out of nowhere and actually, I think, led the team in sacks. Ziggy Ansah had a problem with injury last year and wasn't the same Ziggy until about 10, 11 games into the season, and he became a factor. But Kerry Hyder really provided the Lions with a big pass rush. And I think that Devin was kind of more expected to be that guy and didn't produce as much as a guy that they got kind of in a free agency deal, and he was picked up as kind of an afterthought. He was more of a factor than Devin was. Now, that's not to say Devin can't play. There were days when I'd do post-game, he was the first guy I wanted to talk to in the locker room because he disrupted an offense. But that didn't happen on a weekly basis. You'd like to see a guy be more consistent. And Devin had some days that were all-pro days and other days where he was just another guy.
2 years ago, if I read correctly, Jim, I had seen that the Lions had voted him their most improved player in 2015 when he had 7.5 sacks. Obviously, things were better then. He was more consistent, and clearly he made more of an impact. Was there something about that season that you could say made him a better player that he'd have to recapture if he was going to be productive for the Giants?
Yeah, I think the fact that Ziggy Ansah was having a great year. when the other guy on the other side is getting doubled and tripled, and they're chipping him, and they're doing all kinds of stuff, that leaves the other guy on the other side all alone.
Well, you know, now the Giants got a pretty darn good defensive line right now, even without Devin Taylor coming in here.
Oh, I know they do, and that's the thing. I think he's a rotational guy in this deal, and he will give you speed. I'm telling you, the Giants can line up a defensive front four now that you know, you could line up in a 4x100 track team. They'll have that kind of, I think, depth from a speed standpoint. But then again, then I'm the old school guy says, if you can line those guys up in there, well, then who's going to stop you from pounding it and running against you? Like the Steelers would line up with their guys. They see those little, well, they see the big, tall, fast guys. Are you going to just pound them and let them run at you?
Sure.
Or a team that likes to run the football? That would be you know, my concern. But Devin, there's no question. Devin can help you. It's about getting him in the right position and the right number of snaps where he can play on every down and make something happen, because he's good enough to do that. It's just that I don't think on an every down basis the Lions felt that he was better than some of the guys they already had, like a Kerry Hyder, or the way they're going to play defense now with new linebackers that they brought in.
May simply be a case, Jim, of the more you see a guy and the more that he's out there, the more he gets exposed. And as I think we've determined with your phone call, a rotational player is the best role for him.
It could be. I'm just saying, too, when he had that most improved deal, I'm sure that everybody around the league thought about that, saw some film, says, hey, this guy's pretty good. Maybe we ought to pay more attention to him. Then all of a sudden they started chipping him. You know, and you know how it goes. I mean, the better you get, the more attention you're going to get.
Yep.
And if you're going to stay really good at the top level, you're going to have to fight even harder because other people are going to pay attention.
Absolutely.
I mean, Calvin Johnson came in as a rookie, and they said, oh, he's a big, tall kid, but can he play? Well, then he goes out and catches 1,500 yards worth of passes. All of a sudden, you got safeties and linebackers and everybody else out there banging him off the line of scrimmage, trying to take him away. And that's what they do in the NFL. Bill Belichick's made a career out of taking your best asset and taking it away from you. And that's what the NFL likes to do.
Well, and then also piggybacking off of your point, Jim, when Ndamukong Suh's no longer there, Nick Fairley's no longer there. As
there
you mentioned,
you go.
Ziggy Ansah's banged up. They're going to start looking at guys like Devin Taylor because those are the productive ones still left
there
on the field.
There you go.
Yeah, as we're talking with
Jim. Absolutely. That's just part of the game. In the NFL, if you're hurting somebody, they're going to find a way to make you not hurt them.
Yep.
And that's the nature of the beast in the NFL. So if you're going to be a great player, and that's why guys, you know, that over the years, you know, continue to be great players, you know they're fighting harder. And when offensive and defensive coordinators talk about how to limit you or a player, you know that you've made an impact.
Yes.
But that also means that you're facing the best shot they're going to give you every week. And if you're able to stay good and stay productive through all that, those are the guys that go to Hawaii in January.
And every guy in the trenches will tell you, Jim, the minute they start singling you one-on-one again, you better start thinking about getting out of the game.
Amen, brother.
We're talking with Jim Bradstatter, the Lions radio analyst. Jim, last one for me. You alluded to when he had productive games, he was the first one you tried to turn to get a radio interview. What is he like in the locker room? What type of personality does he have in terms of how he may mesh with new teammates now?
I think he's pretty good. He's relatively quiet, but he's a little flamboyant. I mean, he wore some suits on the road that would, you know, rival some of these NBA guys.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. He's an interesting guy. But like I said, he'll be a little flamboyant in regards to his wardrobe. He has some dreads, and I don't know whether he's changed those or whether he will change them when he goes to Detroit. And sometimes the colors are a little different in there, but it's, you know, young guys these days, kind of how they dress and, you know, how they comb their hair and all that other stuff really doesn't matter too much as long as on Sunday during between 1 and 4 o'clock, they get the job done.
Exactly.
Well, Jim, we greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks for hopping on and providing some background on Devin Taylor.
Thank you, Jim.
Glad to do it. You guys take care.
You as well. Jim Bradstatter, Lions radio analyst, providing some insight on what Devin Taylor will bring to the Giants. He had mentioned 2015 rotational player when he had the 7 sacks. 2016 became a starter, more attention, 4.5 sacks. So plenty of sacks over the last 2 seasons, but it seems as if a guy that Spags maybe could plug in and out from what Jim said.
Well, look, let me go back to the initial conversation we had at the start of the program. Dave Tollefson was not going to be a 45 to 50 snap a game guy. Under those conditions, Dave Tollefson was going to get beaten up. and he was going to get, you know, black and blues, and he was going to have his problems lasting 16 games and being a productive defensive end. But when you said to Dave Tollison, can you give me 20 snaps every Sunday? You know what? There were going to be 20 snaps of a defensive end who was foaming at the mouth and was going to do everything he could to make life miserable for the other team. Maybe that's what it turns out to be. And from all discussions, it sounds like Devin Taylor's that kind of guy. Devin, give us 15 to 20 snaps and just play your butt off for those snaps and let's see what happens. And as you said, who else is on that line? Snacks is on that line. OV's on that line. You know, JPP's on that line. He's got some really good players who are going to be playing next to him on that line, which is also going to make it harder for teams to try to focus on him. He's going to get singled up. That's pretty obvious. Based on what the Giants have on the line, he's going to get singled up. And if Jim is right about the speed coming off the line, well, to me, that's just telling me Kiwanuka. When he was a defensive end at the beginning of his career, and we all thought he was going to be an impact player until they moved him to linebacker.
And then he suffered some injuries, too.
But yeah, that's what that's telling me. That's what that's telling me. And, I think that's a plus. Again, because of how – it's like when we talk about defensive backs and you know, the Giants are looking for, I think, the fourth corner on their depth chart. Well, the guy's only got to be good enough to cover the other team's fourth wide receiver. You know, he doesn't have to be the one
correct
or the two.
But a little different with the defensive end who rotates because you're still coming in and going up against the starting caliber tackles. So it's not like you're going up against
that
the back
true
tackle. A little bit different. I get your point, but you're going up against the starting top caliber
or
opposition.
Or if you're sending a blitz package, he's going up against the tight end.
Correct. He may be picked up or a running back who has to come on last second.
Could be.
Some favorable matchups.
You could work a scheme for him, and you could make things work and make it very difficult for folks to use muscle against your speed rusher. You could do that.
Well, and I think it's fair to say, Paul, from what we've been discussing, the Giants are at the point where you've got some quantity for that third defensive end spot. Where does the consistency come from? Meaning, we've seen flashes. Kerry Wynn's had flashes in previous seasons, Paul. Romeo Okwara, when he filled in for JPP late last season, the Cowboys game jumps out. Now you have Devin Taylor in the mix. We'll see what Avery Moss can bring to the table. Can 00 stay healthy? There's options, but who's going to be that guy that every time you put him on the field, Paul, he can showcase that speed, he can go 100%, and he can continue the pass rush to the level of Vernon and JPP?
Well, like I said, you can't go on the field and be invisible.
Yeah.
It's just not acceptable. And the one thing that can at least help you find a guy who is going to help you, competition. It's the key word. The key word for every depth chart in the league, competition. That, more than anything else, gives you the opportunity to bring something out of a guy who may have been just like a guy. Now, all of a sudden, competition makes him better than just a guy.
Well, we're going to talk about another member of that competition in terms of Avery Moss a little bit later on. Chris Samarone, who is the Youngstown State football radio analyst, will be joining us. In the meantime, we want to open up the phone lines, get the conversation going here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, 201-939-4513. Andrew is in Stanhope. Andrew, what's happening?
What's going on?
Doing well,
got Andrew? A good name, Taylor, for a pass rush. Not only Lawrence Taylor, but Sean Taylor.
And Jason Taylor.
Guys,
yes.
It's always hard, like I say, to rush the passer. Speaking of Lawrence Taylor, that's what he was saying, how it's uneven against, if you judge an offensive lineman, if he gives up three sacks, he had a bad game. But if he stops the guy every time except for those three times, it's still a bad game. But the pass rusher had a great game if he gets three sacks.
Right.
And a funny, on the WFAN, the fan, Jerry Seinfeld, the comedian, sometimes calls Steve Smoozer, and Seinfeld was asking him, why did they always say that the defense got tired? He said, isn't the offense out there for the same amount of plays? Shouldn't they be equally tired? So what he was saying is that rushing the passer, it's harder to get to the quarterback. So I'm happy they have signed him. And like you said, I think the defensive line is back on up, you know, upswing with Snacks and the guys you said. So I just want to ask, since Paul's here, an old school question about quarterbacks. Archie Manning, Franz Tarkington, Roger Staubach. Who do you think was the best of those three quarterbacks. I would say Staubach, but he was on a better team. So I can rephrase it. Do you think Archie Manning and Fran Tarkington would be as good as Staubach if they were on the Cowboys in that era?
Well, you know, I'm very partial to Tarkington for obvious reasons. But I will say this. If you remember going back to those early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, Staubach came in after serving his military commitment. So he was a lot older when he came into the league and much more mature than those other guys who came in right out of school. He also had better teams to play on for the most part. Also had a head coach in Tom Landry who called all of his plays. Now, please, don't underestimate the value of that. Because in those days, coaches were not calling plays. The quarterbacks were calling the plays out of the huddle and over center, all themselves. But Landry believed, my system, this is the way it's going to be. I'm calling the plays. So he always had the plays given to Staubach, and Staubach would only have to execute the plays. Now, I'm sorry, but being old school like I am, you know, and of course, nowadays, how many quarterbacks call their own stuff?
No, well, you
hardly at all.
The staffs are much bigger, too.
Exactly. But I go back to the days when quarterbacks called their own plays. Tarkington did that. You know, Archie did that. Staubach never did because Landry wouldn't let him. So if you want to put value in a quarterback's brain and his instincts and his smarts and say that's added value, then you clearly got to take Tarkington over Staubach any day of the week. I mean, that, it's not even close, okay? Because at least Fran called his own games. Roger never did. Archie had a heck of an arm and great, you know, maneuverability, but I would not put him in the class of those other guys.
All right, Andrew, appreciate the phone call.
Thanks
so much for chiming in here. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Nick is in the Meadowlands. Nick, what's happening? Nick, how we doing?
Hello.
Yeah, Nick.
Hello.
What's happening?
Oh, all right, guys. I got cut off. Good, good.
So what do you got for us?
That guy was mentioning Sean Taylor. That's great, man. What a player, right?
I think
we got a guy that idolizes him, right? That's on our team.
Landon Collins,
yeah. The former Washington Redskins safety. Yeah.
Yeah, that's Landon Collins. I think he's going to be getting up there, you know, one day. Let's just hope, you know what I mean? He's something else. Oh, JPP seems a little bit lighter, huh? What do you think about that, Paul? Is he going to, you know, put on a few more pounds whenever the season starts?
I don't think so.
What do you think?
I think they're better off having him play what he played this past year when he lost a bunch of weight. I mean, look at how effective he was for the snaps that he played, and he was overused. I mean, I want to be careful saying that. Let me pull that word back. He wasn't overused in terms of he was effective and he clearly didn't show any signs of fatigue. But in a perfect world, you'd like to give him more snaps off than they gave him last year. So in that regard, he was overused.
Well, you could say the same thing about Vernon, two of them. I mean,
absolutely.
They were essentially 1-2 in the NFL last year in snaps.
I think they're going to, you know, there's a lot of guys on depth from what I'm seeing, you know. There's a lot of guys on the depth chart. The
defensive end is very healthy right now.
I think they'll find, you know, somebody that'll let go Gwar. I can't, you know, I really got hopes for him, you know. I think, you know, he'll be that guy that can fit into that spot, you know. That motor just keeps running like in that Dallas game, you know. You just get better. But so you're saying that JPP, he played at 265 last year? He wasn't at like 278 like he's listed?
I think he was roughly about 270 last year from what I can remember.
Okay. All right. So what I've been hearing, he looks like I don't know if he said it or not. He said 265, but okay, he'll probably be like 270 whenever they.
A couple of pounds fluctuations, really not that big of a deal.
Exactly.
I mean,
we've
seen it with Brandon Marshall too.
A couple of the guys, they look like that. Like you know, from what I'm seeing, you know, on interviews and stuff, Eli Apple looks bigger. He said he gained about 10 pounds.
That is true.
Put more muscle.
That's good. And he says he's faster. They clocked him faster. So you can gain weight and be faster, you know.
Well, you know, I think that does not happen in every instance. You got to be very, very careful when you're a defensive back and you start to put on some pounds and muscle. You need to be well aware of how that affects your speed quotient. And in his case, apparently it hasn't. But that does not always happen. And believe me, the Giants are going to be careful, and they're going to monitor that. Because if all of a sudden he starts to slow down, they're going to say, hey, wait a minute, maybe this wasn't such a good idea.
Well, and here's another thing to keep in mind. When Eli Apple mentioned that they were testing him, he's still in OTA form without the pads on. So that speed doesn't reflect what he'd be wearing during the course of a game.
Yeah, but they're measuring the GPS numbers.
Correct.
Yeah, they're exactly
with shirts and shorts
GPS
last
numbers.
Year compared to shirts and shorts this year. And they said that he had his fastest practice ever in the OTA the other day. So, no, I do think it's relevant. I absolutely think that measuring stick is on a constant.
All I'm saying is I think that the true judgment's going to come when you see the full pads and everything on to determine whether or not that is equivalent in terms of speed.
Well, if his pads are equivalent to the ones he wore last year, it won't change.
I get that. I'm just saying that to me, I'm more of a believer to see it first before we jump to conclusions that all of a sudden, you know, the speed is that much more given the fact that there's more muscle.
I'm more interested in his stamina, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because if he's put on 10 pounds.
You know what I think, too,
you know,
guys?
That you can hang around for four quarters.
The strength and conditioning, you know, and he's young, you know, so that it's all a good thing with that. But what else was I going to say about Paul, what do you think with running backs? I was watching something the other day, and it really got me intrigued with running backs. Who's the top five running backs of all time?
Oh,
best
wow.
Running backs.
Well, you know, you're going to have Peyton in there. You're going to have Jim Brown in there.
You're
going to have Emmitt Smith in there.
What about Barry Sanders?
You know, Barry Sanders is going to have to be in there, and there's room for one more guy.
Who's that five?
You want to put O.J. in there? I could put O.J. Simpson in there. I wouldn't argue with you. He did it in a 14-game season, and he was pretty incredible.
I think you got to consider LaDainian Tomlinson as well. I mean,
not even close.
Top
five?
LT.
Not even close.
Tomlinson, you know, given his versatility and his numbers, he's in the conversation.
Different game.
Listen.
And Curtis Martin.
I put LT over Curtis Martin in my opinion.
Yeah, I think Tomlinson's better than Curtis Martin. Yeah. But Curtis Martin was a good solid running back. But I was watching that Football Life of Barry Sanders, and it just reminded me of how excited I used to be on Thanksgiving Day to watch. You know, I wasn't a Giant. You know, I was always a Giants fan, but I didn't like the Lions. But I liked Barry Sanders. You know, I always liked watching him. He was something else.
I mean, you know, and the thing is, too, the question has to be asked, are you talking about the guy in his prime, or are you talking about the guy overall over his entire career, too?
Well, I'm talking about the guy that went to the Lions and they started going to the playoffs.
No. I'm saying when you ask the question about who the top five running backs of all time, I mean,
and then
if you're going to go power
overall,
backs,
overall, who are
you
the,
know,
you know,
power,
I know
power
Jim
backs.
Brown and Walter Payton are going to be up there. But
roles.
Power backs, you got to go Jim Brown. You got to go Earl Campbell. You got to go
Campbell,
Larry Zonka.
Yeah.
And you got to go John Riggins. If you're talking power backs, there's no one even close to those guys.
What about Eric Dickerson?
Dickerson's pretty high.
Conversation. I forgot about
he's
him.
Pretty
he
high.
Great too.
He's pretty high. I don't know if he's top five, but he's pretty high. You know?
We got to stretch it. Okay, top 10.
You know?
Wow.
But look, look, and I remember Gale Sayers too, okay? Gale Sayers was absolutely insanely talented, okay? But shortened career due to injuries. But when Gale Sayers,
Davis.
You know, there's another one. Terrell Davis is not a Hall of Famer to me because I think longevity is a factor when voting for true greatness. You must do it for the better part of a decade. And
exactly.
Terrell Davis does not make it for me. Just like Jamal Lewis, who ran for 2,000 yards with the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah.
Guess
all
what?
These guys have
congratulations on your yardage. You're not a Hall of Famer.
Who did it twice?
You know?
Who hit 2,000 twice in their career?
Davis did, didn't he?
I don't know if he hit it twice.
Did Dickerson do it twice?
No, Dickerson didn't do
it twice.
I'll tell you a guy who gets cheated, Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker is a top 10 running back of all time. But he gets knocked out of it because people don't want to recognize the USFL. And people don't want to recognize.
Like he can run.
I know he does. Yeah. And they don't want to recognize his kick return yardage. But look at his all-purpose yardage.
Good kick returner. Good
Herschel,
kick returner
Herschel Walker is truly one of the all-time greats who belongs in the Hall of Fame. It's ridiculous that he's not in there, and Terrell Davis is. Well, that's not even that's not even for conversation.
I mean, Marshall.
Well, crazy.
I think
you know with
to
today how running backs they don't last very long is like you were saying. You know, that's running. That's why running backs are dime a dozen, because look at all these guys that were so good. You know, and they had short careers. They could have been great. You know.
Yeah, no
really
question.
Great.
No question.
Well, there's a lot of guys that deserve consideration, Nick, and appreciate the phone call. I mean, I would also, you know.
Marcus, yeah, guys, good talking to you.
You got it. Marcus Allen is another guy we didn't bring up.
Love Marcus
so,
Allen.
So, you know, I mean, you could sit here and name tons of running backs that, to me, belong in the conversation.
Just remember, 14-game season years ago. I know you're too young to remember that.
Well, no, I'm aware that
14-game season.
Yeah.
O.J. Simpson, 2014 games. Man. That's unbelievable.
Well, I mean, what you're bringing up is the fact that the generations and the style of football have
Ladanian
to be considered.
Tomlinson, yeah. Please.
Paul,
Paul,
for some reason, you're hating on Ladanian Tomlinson. Have you looked at his numbers recently? Have you looked at his versatility? I mean, listen, I know you're old school, but my goodness.
No.
Ladanian Tomlinson is one of the greatest running backs that ever played the game.
He's not in the top 10.
Well, I think most people.
This guy was asking for top 5.
I think most
people. He's not top 10.
I think most people would disagree with you.
Marcus Allen?
Tomlinson, to me, is a top 10 running back of all time.
You would take him over Marcus Allen?
Seriously? I certainly would consider that, absolutely.
I don't know if you saw enough of Marcus Allen.
No, I've seen Marcus Allen, but remember, Tomlinson was a receiver, too.
Understood.
I'm not going to forget that. Allen could catch the football, too, but
he sure could.
He did, but that's a big part. Plus, we also, by the way, didn't even mention Adrian Peterson, too. And when it's all said and done, he's going to be in the conversation as well.
Adrian Peterson's certainly getting there.
It's very, very difficult to get to that point. All right, we'll get back to the running back debate a little bit later on here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We want to steer back to the defensive end position, and we were talking about Devin Taylor, one of the free agent additions to the Giants. Well, how about a rookie that is looking to make an impact in year number one, and an individual who knows Avery Moss quite well is Chris Samarone, the radio analyst for Youngstown State Football. Chris, Lance, Meadow, Paul Dottino with here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. And we wanted to bring you on, Chris, to provide some more insight on Avery Moss. We've done a lot of spots on the rookie class. And Avery was at Youngstown State for 2 years after he transferred from Nebraska. What jumped out to you about his play in terms of the last two seasons that he was at Youngstown State? He was by far a much more bigger part of the game plan because he was a starter in his last year.
Absolutely. Well, we were excited to get him from Nebraska. When he transferred, we knew about some of the off-the-field problems we had, so we weren't sure because at Youngstown State, you know, we get a lot of transfers, and they don't always pan out from the big schools. And so we had some skepticism about Avery's and how he would pan out for us, but I got to say he had a wonderful career. In 2015, he kind of did some spot duty, shared time with some other defensive linemen, was in the mix, but in his senior year, you really saw what he could do as he started all 15 games for us. And I think he had 11 or 12 sacks for the season. He was in the backfield almost, it seemed like every play. I mean, he was just one of those type of players where, you know, he had tremendous burst off the line of scrimmage, was always in the backfield wrecking havoc. And I think he had close to 20 tackles for a loss. I mean, he was very disruptive on the defensive line. And I can tell you that I don't recall a team being able to single block him the entire year. And probably one of the best games he had his senior season is when we played West Virginia. Their two offensive tackles had a nightmare game trying to handle him. And I got to say that was one of the games that probably stood out for pro scouts is he dominated their two offensive tackles.
Well, let me give you the numbers here just to for the folks out there who are watching the show. 11 sacks, 17 and a half tackles for a loss, 59 tackles for the season, all very stellar numbers. If I were to ask you, Chris, for a thumbnail scouting report on what's his best move, what does he do really, really well, and what's he going to have to learn to get to the NFL level, what would that be?
Well, I could tell you that, to me, his best, I'm a former offensive lineman, I could tell you what he did well was bull rush. Although in the combine, his bench press wasn't all that impressive. I want to say he did less than 15 times with 2 1/4.
Yeah.
that really isn't indicative of how strong this kid is. His bull rush was probably his best attribute, as he was able to drive offensive linemen, I'm talking 300-pounders, and just push them into the backfield. Now, with that, he also had tremendous quickness and was able to beat offensive linemen with speed. And you wouldn't think of that at our level, a 270-pounder, being able to beat guys with speed. And he was able to do that a lot with, like, a bull, you know, using that bull rush, and then also, you know, like a rip move or a swim technique, as he was, again, able to cause havoc into the backfield. I think the thing that he's going to have to work on, I think, at the next level is being able to play down the line of scrimmage in the run game. You know, that straight-ahead strength that he has as a bull rusher, you got to be able to move laterally. So I think that's one of the things that he's going to have to get acclimated to as he gets into practice and he's seeing that type of competition you see at the pro level. But, you know, when you talk to Coach Pelini, he'll tell you that of the two defense ends we had this year, and mind you, on the other side of the line of scrimmage, the opposite Avery this year was Derek Rivers, who was the third-round pick of the New England Patriots. So I bet you if you ask Coach Pelini, he'll tell you that Avery Moss probably right now is more pro-ready than Derek Rivers is. And what I mean by that is he just physically, he's a bigger kid right now. And his technique at the line of scrimmage against offensive linemen is very good. He's very good at getting off blocks. And, again, his strength, being able to push offensive linemen in the backfield, showed itself throughout this season. He was just a kid that you couldn't single block. You had a double team.
Well, the good news for Avery Moss, you mentioned Derek Rivers was playing opposite him, Chris, and you have at least JPP and Vernon if he's in a game where he's going to have some, you know, stellar competition alongside him, so that this way maybe he won't see double teams and so forth. You mentioned that he's got to work in terms of stopping the run. What the Giants don't like to do a lot is they like to sometimes move pass rushers inside. How often, if at all, did Youngstown State experiment and move a guy like Avery Moss inside, or was he solely used off the edge, Chris?
Well, I could say his junior season, that 2015 season, because we had a senior defensive end opposite Derek Rivers that year, Avery kind of played behind him but saw a lot of time in that interior defensive line. They call that the three technique, which is on the outside shoulder of the offensive guard. He played a lot of that, and I really do see him playing that at the pro level. And, you know, I think that's going to entail him maybe putting on a few more pounds, getting a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. But I think him matching up with centers and guards, he'd have an advantage because of that speed and explosiveness off the line of scrimmage. I just think he needs to get a little better because in the run game, when you're playing down inside, you're probably going to see a lot more double teams at the point of contact. So you got to be strong and stout to hold your ground, as opposed where his defense end, he was playing more times than not, probably keeping his outside arm free. Allowing him again to use some of his quickness and explosiveness to get outside and keep contained. While on the inside, he's going to have to take on some double teams and hold his ground so those linebackers can run free. And I think, again, that's where it's going to take an adjustment to him. But as you guys said, if the Giants like to bring him down inside and rush the passer, his speed and quickness at 270 pounds against, you know, maybe a slower offensive guard or center, I think he'd be a matchup nightmare, especially if he's getting single-teamed.
Chris, so unable to get film on Youngstown State, I'm asking some questions here that only an eyewitness can tell us about. What about his motor? What about his intensity level? What about his consistency in terms of bringing the kind of fire that you're talking about?
Well, the skepticism that I always have when you get I was a transfer at Youngstown State. I came from the University of Kentucky, and I played there in the early 90s. So, you come in, and you say, well, you're coming from a bigger school, and, you know, how hard is this kid going to work? Does he want it? And, you know, that junior year, he showed some signs of greatness, but, you know, didn't see a whole lot of it because he didn't play as much as you thought he would coming from the bigger school. Well, I tell you what, he worked his butt off the entire offseason before senior year. And he had a season to remember. Obviously, you read the statistics. But I can tell you what I noticed is he was making plays opposite, you know, on the opposite side of the field. He was running down quarterbacks, running backs, you know, going whistle to whistle. And, Coach Pelini, you know, I credit him and his staff instilling that in him. And then also the kid himself, as he worked his butt off. He trained, he got himself ready for his senior season, and he played his butt off. And I think the thing that stood out this year the most to us, myself and my partner, Bob Hannon, is we even talked about it, is late in the year he suffered a pretty good ankle injury, and he played through it in our playoff run. I mean, he towed the line, even though he couldn't give it 100% because of the injury, he had a pretty good ankle sprain. But he played through it and showed some great toughness. And, you know, I give him credit for that, knowing that he probably had a pro future ahead of himself. But he played through that type of injury. So I think you guys will not be disappointed with his toughness. And I think he really wants this. And he showed it at Youngstown State. So I think you're going to see the effort that it takes to be a professional football player.
I'm guessing, Chris, you refer to the game against James Madison in January. 8 tackles, 3 tackles for a loss, and a sack. And if he did that on a gippy ankle, that says a lot.
Well, I could tell you that he played our playoffs the way our last game was the weekend before Christmas, and then you don't play the national championship game for about 3 weeks later.
Right.
So he had 2.5 weeks to get healed up, but he played that entire first 4 games of the playoffs on a bad ankle. So, he fought through that, played through it. You know, and that, again, shows that work ethic, is that after our semifinal game, he got in the training room. There wasn't going home for Christmas and that type of stuff. He was getting ready for that national championship game, and you can see by the numbers the type of performance he had in that game.
We're talking with Chris Amarone, Youngstown State football radio analyst, where the Giants' fifth-round pick this year, Avery Moss, played. One of the other statistics that jumps off the page to me, Chris, is 5 forced fumbles combined in the last 2 seasons. And when you think about the Giants, you think about OCU Mignora, who played here. He had a knack for not just getting to the quarterback, but stripping the football away, changing field position. Why did Avery Moss have a knack, it seems, for taking away the football in addition to also getting to the point of contact?
Well, again, I think a lot of that to his strength. He's just a naturally strong kid, upper body strength, tremendous. And when he would zero in on a quarterback, a technique that's taught him too, though, is to swipe and strip that ball from. So a lot of his forced fumbles were the result of getting to the quarterback and stripping the ball from the quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I'll tell you, 270 pounds when you hit a running back, the way he can bring it, sometimes you're going to jar that ball loose. And again, he's just a naturally strong kid, and the way he's able to, handle offensive linemen. Again, if you got that strength and you're hitting a quarterback, a lot of times you're going to get a ball that's on the ground.
So let me ask you, Chris, final question for me. In terms of what the Giants fans should expect from him as a rookie, because every guy who comes out of college and enters the NFL is going to have certain expectations. Some will be realistic. Some will not be realistic. Is this a guy in your mind who, at the beginning, gets his feet wet, maybe gets some rotational snaps at the back end of the depth chart as a rookie, and then in year 2 becomes more of a player who may get regular rotation snaps? Is that what we're talking about here? Is he going to be a rotational guy, or is he quickly going to be a starter? Well, not a starter, not with the Giants guys, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. No, I've heard some people refer to him as a poor man's Tuck, who had a great career for the Giants. And I kind of, maybe not getting to that level, but I could see him stepping in and initially probably being a rotational guy for the Giants, but eventually maybe settling in and being that 3 technique that can rush, can play all 3 downs. I think he needs to work on the run portion of it. That's why I think he'd be rotational. Maybe comes in on passing downs. But I think over time, as he gets bigger and stronger and used to the game, I think he can play all 3 downs because, again, he has the technique and the quickness to rush the passer. But he also, he has that strength where I think inside he can handle himself in the run game once he gets a little bit bigger and gets coached up even more. But I really like his future there. I mean, this is a kid that was one of the top-rated defense ends coming out of the country in high school. So the talent is there, and I think you'll see that's why he got drafted. And I just think he learned some lessons from some off-the-field issues at Nebraska. So I think you're going to get a more mature kid than you may otherwise get coming out of college because he's been through some tough times, and he learned from it, and he grew from it, and he's made the most of his second opportunity. And I think you'll like what you're going to get with Avery Moss, and I'm excited to see where he ends up this year.
Well, and Chris, that brings me to my last question before we let you go. And you noted in Nebraska did have some of the off-the-field situations, but Bo Pelini, who then came to Youngstown State, knew him well and obviously gave him that second chance. And you mentioned you saw signs in terms of his work ethic playing through injury. From your interaction, I'm sure you have a chance to speak to some of these players off the field. I mean, how did you see him mature? What was it that jumped out to you that said, you know what, he's certainly taking advantage of his second opportunity?
Well, just a humble kid, quiet, you know, kept to himself, you know, good in the classroom, great kid as far as representing our football team out into the community. I tell you, for the 2.5 years, he was actually 3 years, I think he was on the campus here at YSU, you didn't hear anything bad about the kid. So, you know, again, that's just a kid, I think, that learned his lesson, was young and dumb at Nebraska, made a mistake, and suffered the consequences for it. But Bo Pelini, who's a smart guy, who's been in this business a long time, who's coached at the pro level, you know, he saw something in this kid and gave him a chance. And usually when Bo Pelini gives a kid a chance, because we get a lot of transfers, when he gives a kid a chance, he puts some high expectations on him. And, you know, he don't give him a second chance after that. He puts those expectations on him. He expects them to throw the line more so maybe than any other kid because they've already had a second opportunity. And this kid did all that. And again, if you talk to Bo Pelini, he'll tell you how great of a kid he is, how hard of a worker he is, and he's a humble, respectful kid.
Well, Chris, we greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for providing some background info on Avery Moss.
Thanks, Chris.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
All right, Chris Amarone, Youngstown State football radio analyst, and some interesting tidbits on what Avery Moss may bring to the table. I think it's interesting that he was impressed, obviously, with his pass rushing skill set, says that he has to work on the run, but certainly perhaps even more upside than Derek Rivers, who went to the Patriots.
You know, what these two guys have said to us as eyewitness accounts and guys who probably know more about these players than anybody here could possibly know. After all, they were with them for an extended period of time. What we have now learned is that that competition is real. These guys are coming here to fight hard for roster spots. Devin Taylor, yeah, rotational player, but this is his new lease on life. And if he's going to excel in that role and make something out of his NFL career, it's on the line for him right now because he was jettisoned by the Lions as an inconsistent guy who may be just a guy. And I'm sure he doesn't want to be known as that anymore. So that's a big deal. And obviously Avery Moss, everything that Chris just told us, it's off the charts.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up because I see that as a theme going back to Devin Taylor. DJ Fluker, he's got something to prove, right? Devin Taylor, he's got something to prove. Even Double O, he's got something to prove. A lot of these players, that seems to be the theme. Taking chances on guys that maybe were overlooked, didn't get the production that they had hoped the previous season, Paul, and are now coming in to help aid the competition. So that, to me, is a theme in addition to adding veterans across the board.
Competition, more often than not, will light the match. Now, it's up to the match to light the fire and to have that player do what he's supposed to do to win the job. And if he doesn't, he falls by the wayside.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to reopen up the phone lines if you want to chime in on a variety of different topics. We're focusing on the defensive line, but obviously everything is up for debate. Let's head to Twitter, a number of people weighing in on some of the things that we brought up in terms of our previous conversations. Here's an interesting one from James at little_TNT32. On the NASCAR package, when you have four defensive ends in, who do you project to be the fourth pass rusher, he's asking. Well, we know JPP and Verner are in. I think we can safely assume that.
It's to be determined.
Yeah.
We've been using this word competition now all show. In fact, we've been talking about it for several weeks. And you know what? Competition will determine that. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's going to be Owa or Okwara or Kennard. Don't forget Kennard. He's in this thing too.
Yep.
And Taylor and Moss. How great is it that the Giants actually have so many numbers now that they can fuss with and they can find what these skill sets are best suited for so that Spags can go back up into his office and start diagramming all kinds of schemes and stunts and different packages and blitz schemes and packages so that he can find out the best way to maximize his pass rush. How great is that? So I'm not going to sit here and tell you who it's going to be. What I would like it to be, I'm going to tell you right now what I'd like it to be. I'd like it for JPP and Vernon to be in the deal. I would love to see Okwara to take another step up from what he showed last year and for him to be the other guy in the deal. And whoever the defensive tackle is, you got to figure the defensive tackle, you know, I don't know if Tomlinson's going to be that guy because they're going to want to have one big bulky guy probably in there, three rushers and probably one bulky guy. You know, is that Snacks is probably not going to be that guy. It's probably going to be Tomlinson. Could it be Robert Thomas even? Because you want one stay-at-home bulky guy in there. You don't want to go all light across the board.
Unless, I mean, the only guy that comes to mind is Kerry Wynn's good against the run. So I could see
he,
them
he
moving
could be
him
the
inside.
Guy.
I mean, that's the guy. That's the guy that I was going to throw out.
Again,
that
does he make the team?
Well, of course. I mean, we don't know. But I think based on the conversation right now, it's fair to throw out a variety of names.
Sure.
When the fact that he's strong and consistent against the run, I think bodes well for him in one of those situations with NASCAR if they didn't want to keep the bulkier defensive tackle. As you mentioned, I mean, Jay Bromley, Robert Thomas, you said, Dalvin Tomlinson, they have some options there. But I think they have guys that have a knack for getting to the quarterback that also can balance it out with
I mean,
their run-stopping ability.
For all we know, maybe Tomlinson shows during training camp in the preseason that he can actually apply pass rush.
Yeah.
We've heard that he could do it. Let's see if he does, because if he does, you don't want to take him off the field.
And that's the whole point. Any defensive tackle doesn't want to come off the field, but in order to keep on the field, you have to prove that you get to the quarterback. It was the same thing we were talking about with Jonathan Hankins. When he had that 7-sack campaign, we were wondering, Paul, is this a flash, or is this something that he's going to build upon moving forward? Because if he can continue to do that, that's more of a reason you don't take him off the field. Keep him. He could get to the quarterback. Let's take a look at more on Twitter. James also says, last year the undrafted free agents played productive snaps. Do you think this year the undrafted free agents will make the same type of an impact perhaps as a year ago? Now, he's not necessarily honing in on just the defensive linemen, but since we're focusing on that, I think it's fair to at least throw out more of those names. But you also have undrafted free agents at all types of positions, Paul.
Well, undrafted free agents, I guess, you know, if you're talking about who the Giants picked up afterwards, Wheeler is the guy that comes to mind right away.
Offensive
because
lineman.
Jerry Reese himself came out real quickly before Wheeler even got here and said, oh, yeah, we signed Wheeler from USC. You know, so you would think he's the guy they probably have, I don't want to say most potential, but a guy who they're probably the most excited about of the undrafted rookie free agents, just based on the fact that they talked about him right away.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. Bash is in Ohio. Bash, what's happening?
How are we doing, Lance? What's going on, Paul?
Hi.
Doing well, Bash. What do you got for us?
I wanted to get some insight from y'all. I possibly can help y'all with this. So I've been thinking as far as what was Jerry's and Ben's idea of the right side of the offensive line with John Jerry, DJ Fluker, and Bobby Hart. Because I know at the last 3 years we had John Jerry on the right side. He started every game with the right guard. And we gave him a 3-year contract this offseason. And we signed DJ Fluker, which I thought was originally coming in to compete with Bobby Hart for the right tackle starting job. But I see that Ben, he's going to be working out the right guard position, rotating with John Jerry for that position. And you only got a 1-year contract, so I'm wondering what's their plan and what's Ben and Jerry's idea as far as sitting Fluker at the right guard instead of with John Jerry instead of competition with Bobby Hart at the right tackle, with Jerry getting a 3-year and Fluker having a 1-year contract.
Well, Fluker was brought in to compete at both spots, but primarily now I think what they decided when they got Bisnovati in the draft, that Bisnovati is probably better suited to try to compete at tackle. And so they said, okay, listen, we got these guys here now, at least for the spring. Let's start Bisnovati at tackle, and let's start Fluker at guard, and let those two guys compete behind the two incumbents. I think that's the way they've diagrammed it right now. But I certainly believe that once you get to training camp, you will see guys flipping and flopping, and they will figure out during the course of the preseason where the guys fit the best. Because we always say this, the top five are getting on the field. okay, come opening day. Your best five are going to play. And that's the way it is, regardless of position, except Richburg is the center. We know that.
Yeah, I think that's safe to pencil in.
Yeah. Right, and I understand. I know you always saw a part as far as competition, which I understand now. What scenario as far as pushing, I'm concerned, if Fluker wins the job with the right guard position over John Jerry and he beats him out in training camp
he
in
could.
Preseason, if Fluker wins that position, what then happens as far as Fluker has 1 year and then they come back next year and they say, Jerry, you're back at your position is back as far as next year with him having a 3 year contract and Fluker is free agent next year? How would that work out?
DJ Fluker's only a fifth-year player coming into this season, okay? He's played 4 years. This is number five. If Fluker turns out to win a starting job on this team, they will try to re-sign him to another contract because he's young enough that he could give them several productive seasons. Why would you not? If he turns out to be that good that he starts, they'll try to bring him back. I don't see a problem here. I think that's good.
Yeah, I wouldn't bash Reed too much into the contractual situation. And I mean, even if you look at it through Jerry's perspective,
yeah,
if he doesn't win, but if Jerry doesn't win a starting job, I mean, think about it. You got a starting caliber guard as your backup in case somebody gets hurt, which is a good position to be in. Because remember, you're not just looking at your five starters. You're also making sure that six and seven are just as strong. Justin Pugh missed a big bulk of last season. Let's not forget about that.
You know, part of the Giants' problems here with the line hasn't just been the starters. It's the problem that the depth chart has been very thin.
When guys go down, you want to make sure you have somebody that can fill in.
Right. And that's all I wanted to hear as far as the understanding of the insight. And that's great. I love the conversation between the two. I wasn't saying it was a problem or anything. I was just saying as far as the John Jerry and the Fluker thing, as far as, and if Fluker, he resigned, what happened with John Jerry? What would happen with John as far as his 3 year? Would they keep him? Or were they trying to reduce him? Or what would happen with John? Not as far as his 3 year contract and being a backup and losing his starting job. What would you think would happen with John?
That's a good problem you hope to have at the end of the season. I mean, you're way too premature to worry about that. Unless you're John's agent and you're looking ahead.
I don't know.
But seriously, there are a lot of things that could happen. Maybe John Jerry doesn't lose the job, and then you don't have to worry about this problem. Maybe John Jerry, for whatever reason, decides to retire at the end of the year. Who knows? I mean, you're so far into hypotheticals here. It's really not worth the question. But what I do like is the fact that there is at least competition there that you hope is going to make the overall line better. And that, to me, is the biggest factor involving this year's offensive line.
And here's another thing that I want to throw out, Bash. Remember, this past season, Marshall Newhouse was brought in as that additional offensive lineman. Maybe whoever loses the battle at the guard or the tackle spot on the right side is utilized as a pseudo type of starter.
Jumbo
where
package.
Brought in, correct.
Third tight end.
So they're going to find ways to utilize the personnel, even maybe if they don't get part of the starting five.
Okay, everything sounds good. That's good, Aaron. I just wanted to, because it was kind of confusing me as far as the whole thing, as far as that, but it sounds good. It's still competition there. It sounds like a good place we're at as far as they go with the old line. It's getting better and everything. I just wanted to get some ideas as far as the Fluker and John Jerry situation. That was
Thank you.
All right, Bash, appreciate the phone call.
Yeah, I do think right now they are working Biznovati at right tackle and Fluker at right guard on the second unit, but I'm sure that those guys are going to get snaps at the other spots during camp.
Yeah, I agree with you, Paul. That's why I'm not reading so much into where guys are lining up during the course of OTAs because, you know, as we saw, Bobby Hart, he got some reps at guard in the past, and they also moved him out to tackle. Once we get to preseason games, then I think maybe you can read into more about where they're utilizing personnel. But considering Fluker has experience at the guard and the tackle spot, Paul, I would think the Giants are going to want to toy with that when you get into game situations just to see who's comfortable playing alongside one another.
And let's face it, Biznovati was a tackle at Pitt, okay?
On the left side, remember, too.
Yes, yes. And so right now, I think what they're doing with him, hey, we're going to get his feet wet. Let's keep him at tackle, which is where he's comfortable, which is what he knows the best. Eventually, he may wind up being a backup guard or a swing guy. But right now, let's just work him at tackle because that's probably the easiest transition we could give him to the NFL.
Makes 100% sense. We were talking about running backs earlier in the show. So mm-hmm. Dave, our top-notch producer, got the list of running backs with 2,000 yards because I believe one of the callers asked if somebody did it twice. It's never been done twice. Okay. O.J. Simpson, Eric Dickerson, Barry Sanders, Terrell Davis, Jamal Lewis, Chris Johnson, and Adrian Peterson.
That's right, Chris 2K, right?
Chris 2K, yes, with the Titans.
Who, by the way, not a Hall of Famer. Don't even ask.
Well, I wasn't going to bring him up.
Okay.
I left him out.
Thank you.
Other guys, though, such as LaDainian Tomlinson, who I don't think you have given enough respect. We had one tweet who went back and did some homework. So I just want to throw these numbers out. Maybe we can get you to.
He is not Marcus Allen. Never was,
here.
Never will
well,
be.
Well, that to me is perhaps a different debate. But Frank the Tank at RomoCop74 says LT was amazing. 8 1,000 seasons. 9 straight double-digit touchdown seasons, averaged 57 receptions per year, and he averaged 15 touchdowns per year. Those are the numbers. Those are the facts, Paul. Take it for what it's worth. You're entitled to your opinion. I'm not going to deny you that, but that's a pretty strong resume the last time I checked.
It is.
So perhaps maybe you can come around on that end. Let's head to a few more tweets on the defensive line. A.J. Marshall at A.J. Marshall 3. I think Devin Taylor and Romeo Okwara as the third and fourth pass rushers, that's who he wants to be in terms of that NASCAR package. Mm-hmm. Then we have at Elo underscore Bajo. I like Kerry Wynn, productive, overachieving player, has a lot of value in his opinion. I hope he can make the team. Well, Kerry Wynn was an undrafted free agent out of Richmond, and I remember he was the surprise. If memory serves me correct, that was the year with Israel Adonijé, where Israel Adonijé, who I constantly bring up, flashed, more than flashed in the preseason, came in, joined the team late. You figured Adonijé, he's on the front track here to make the team. And what happened, Paul? They wound up keeping Kerry Wynn over him.
And, you know, another guy who had a terrific camp in a preseason and made the team was Adewale Ajomo the next year.
Who also flashed in the preseason.
Terrific preseason player. And then got to the regular season, and he was on the back of the depth chart. And to be honest with you, he didn't like very much being buried on the back of the depth chart. And it cost him an opportunity to stick around in this league because his attitude went south. And you know, you got to understand something. A lot of these guys, high school, college, they're stars. They get to the NFL, and now if you're a fringe player and you had to work hard as an undrafted free agent and you made the back of a roster, you know what? It's not owed to you. You don't just get it as a handout. It's something that you have to work for. And just making the team isn't enough. You got to do more than that. And I've seen a lot of guys who either made the 53 or even got to the practice squad and had a big up arrow and then let it crash because their attitude went south. Oh, I can't believe it. I'm only in the 53, but I don't get a jersey. I don't get to play. And all of a sudden, they don't want to play special teams.
Yeah.
And they sulk. And they get all down on themselves.
And mentally, they're out of the game anymore.
They lose confidence. And now they're not breaking their butts at practice. And all of a sudden, the coach is like, why is he here? And then he's gone. It happens.
Well, that's what happens when a player enters what I like to call uncharted territory. They've never had a taste of those types of circumstances because, like you said, they're used to being the star player at campus. They're on top of the world. They're ahead of the depth chart. Maybe they didn't have a lot of competition in college, Paul.
That's right.
They had to solidify their job. That changes when you
get to the NFL. For those players, getting to the 53 is half the battle, maybe not even half of the battle, because now you got to prove you deserve a jersey on Sunday. You got to play special teams. And then you got to work your way up onto the depth chart so that you actually get some real snaps in the game.
And remember, there's guys that are constantly coming in for workouts every week.
All the time.
Because teams are monitoring that, and you have the players
all the time
on the practice squad who are itching to be in your spot and who would not complain about maybe being solely a special teams player.
Nothing for those guys is guaranteed.
Well, that is going to wrap up our program today. We want to thank our two guests for weighing in on Devin Taylor as well as Avery Moss. Thanks for the tweets. Thanks for the phone calls. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running each and every weekday this week, 12 p.m. Eastern. So we'll continue to move along here on the dialogue as the Giants continue OTAs and get set for mandatory minicamp, which will come your way next week. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.